The Manhattan South podcast series is written and narrated by Thomas M. Cassidy, sponsored by Formats Unlimited in Deer Park, New York, produced by Michael DeRita. Manhattan South is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents in this mystery series are a product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales mentioned in these podcasts are entirely coincidental. Manhattan South, Season 1, Episode 2. Dinellen somberly glances one more time at the body of his best friend and begins to leave GQ's apartment. He stops in his tracks, turns around, and pensively scans his surroundings. He senses something is out of place. He notices that the telescope by the living room window is pointing uptown. He asks Detective Ramos if anyone had touched the telescope. She says not since she got there. He asks her to dust it for fingerprints. Then he heads for the elevator. Chapter 3. Unlike the torment and anxiety he felt on his trip up to the 38th floor, Dinellen was livid, laser sharp, and focused as he traveled to the main floor. The only thing on his mind was capturing GQ's killer or killers. When the elevator doors open, he navigates quickly through the jam-packed lobby, swarming with employees, residents, potential eyewitnesses, police, and reporters. As he moves toward the temporary command center, he sees the obscure silhouette of Deputy Mayor Barry Rosen in a small room behind the reception desk, whispering to reporters. Dinellen picks up his pace and avoids making eye contact with Lefty. Just before he reaches the nerve center, he hears a reporter on the hotel's television reporting that confidential sources within the police department have confirmed that GQ was sexually active hours or possibly minutes before his death. The police department is asking for the public's help to identify and find the mysterious blonde who had an early morning rendezvous with GQ. She is described as a tall, attractive young woman with long blonde hair who was last seen dashing from the Tarrant. This mystery woman is not considered a suspect in the murder of GQ, but rather a potential witness. NYPD detectives are pursuing the possibility that GQ was killed by a jealous husband or boyfriend of one of his many lovers. Dinellen is steadfast and attentive when he meets with Sergeant Herb Wagner for a progress report. The sergeant has been supervising a team of 8 detectives who have been interviewing witnesses on the 38th floor and in the lobby of the hotel. All employees, residents, and visitors in those 2 locations are being identified and have or will be interviewed. He reads from his notes. As far as we can tell, GQ gets a visit from a blonde at about 700 hours. And she is seen leaving at about 1100 hours. They apparently have a sexual encounter in his bed. Both take showers. And then the broad is out the door, wet hair and all. The mystery woman is noticed in a big way by the hotel staff as she leaves the hotel. She doesn't hail a cab or ask for directions. She was last seen walking uptown. No witnesses have been able to identify her by name, but most sense they have seen her somewhere. Maybe the movies, television, or in some type of a skin magazine. She is described as drop-dead gorgeous by numerous sources. It appears that the assault occurred shortly after GQ takes his shower, based on the moisture of his hair and the fact that he is found by the chambermaid lying naked on the floor wearing a moist bathrobe. So we figure either the lady popped him, set him up, or an unrelated perp saw her leave and entered the room. We haven't ruled out the mystery woman as a suspect, but I don't think she assaulted him, just based on the force of the blow to the head. Anyway, she was decked out in fashion with expensive jewelry, so there's no apparent motive for robbery. We found no weapon at the scene. We've got a task force looking for the blonde, and we are combing the hotel for anyone who had access to the 38th floor. Dinellen and Detectives Padula and Harrison listened to every one of Wagner's words. Each was developing all sorts of imaginary possibilities of how and why GQ was murdered. Dinellen momentarily reflects on the vision of GQ's lifeless body on the 38th floor and asks if Wagner has a gut feeling. I don't have a good feeling yet, but maybe the lady didn't close the door all the way when she left. The perp just sneaks in and thinks nobody's home. GQ doesn't hear a thing, and he surprises the perp when he comes out of the bathroom. The perp bangs him on the back of the head. GQ doesn't know what hit him. He drops to the floor. The perp gets scared, and so it's not a total loss, looks at the dresser, grabs the wallet, loose change, rings, and watch, and then sneaks quietly out the door. It looks like a rush job. The perp misses all the real valuables that GQ kept in a box in the third drawer of his dresser. That's why I don't think it's the female. If she wanted his dough, she would have known where the treasure was hidden. That's how it looks to me. We've got to find the blonde. She's either the perp or a potential witness. The chief of detectives enters the provisional command center, and she is brought up to speed on the progress of the case. She tells Dinellen that the clock is ticking, and this case is going nowhere fast. Chief Dickerson is a cop first, and she does not like the way this case is developing. She knows that not every case is solved in the first 24 hours, and not every case is solved, period. But as the first female chief of detectives in the NYPD, she is held to a higher standard by police officers, politicians, the community, the media, and, most significantly, herself. Dickerson calls Police Commissioner Joseph P. Ryan to give him a briefing on the GQ murder case. She tells Commissioner Ryan all the relevant details in a clear, concise summary. Then she listens as the commissioner tells her to emphasize to her detectives that she must make absolutely certain that they do not share any information with anyone other than detectives assigned to this case. Above all, she is ordered to only share information with him or Barry Rosen. The chief calls her detectives to the conference room for a brief meeting and passes on the commissioner's orders. Then she directs her squad to continue their investigation and asks to speak privately with Dinellen. This is going to be a tough investigation for the department, and especially for you, Dinellen. Reporters are already digging into the sex angle. They're touting this homicide as a sex god with lovers all over the world. Already, former detectives on radio and television are reporting that GQ was caught in a love triangle and was killed in his New York playpen by a jilted lover. They even identify the perpetrator as the boyfriend or husband of the mystery woman. The desk manager of the Tarrant has already been on the tube talking about the mystery woman. Needless to say, all this will make it much less likely that she will come forward voluntarily, unless she's a glutton for attention. Sex sells, and there is plenty of it here. You know Rosen will be handling the public relations, but don't get distracted. Just go solve this case. Chief Dickerson then leaves the Tarrant for a press conference with Mayor Longley and the commissioner at police headquarters. Chapter 4. Claudia Witt, the supervising forensic pathologist, and her assistants from the medical examiner's office have finished their examination of GQ. They are preparing to take his body to Dr. Weinstein and his team at the morgue. Dinellen sees them leaving the Tarrant and asks them to stop. He pulls up the sheet and takes one more look at his dead friend before they leave. He internalizes his rage and he thinks to himself, GQ's killer is going to pay for this. Big time. Dinellen goes back to the command center and starts scribbling notes about the progress of the case, searching for any clues. Zero. Nothing yet. He takes his notebook and sticks it back in his coat pocket. He knows that ultimately police work comes down to face-to-face interviews, but not the good cop, bad cop crime-solving routines that abound in the movies. Dinellen knows that detectives need to gain the trust of potential witnesses so they won't hesitate to share information, even when they believe their answer is worthless. No bad cops, just good detectives. Dinellen takes a brief moment to reflect about his friend. He's jolted back to reality by the sound of two detectives entering the conference room with a witness. Sal Tonio, the morning desk manager at the Tarrant, became an instant celebrity when he started talking to any reporters who would listen to his instinctive observations about the beautiful mystery woman who spent the early morning with GQ. He delighted in expressing the most spicy and sensuous description of the blonde that his imagination would permit, until he was contacted by homicide detectives and ushered into the command center. Dinellen tells the manager to sit down across from him. He nods to the detectives to close the door and wait outside. Dinellen likes the one-on-one interview, with no distractions. Tonio is uncomfortable. He is sweating and squirming in his chair. He hopes the commander is not angry at him. He doesn't know if the lieutenant is going to scream at him, hit him, or arrest him. Dinellen loosens his tie and unbuttons his shirt at the neck. Tonio is sweating. Dinellen carefully reviews his scribbled notes without saying a word. Occasionally, he glances in a curious manner at Tonio. Without uttering a word, the detective commander is speaking volumes. The manager starts to apologize for blabbering his theories about GQ's death. Dinellen interrupts. Look, what's done is done. But you do realize you may have complicated this investigation. I'm a homicide detective, Tonio. I want to solve this case and find the person or persons who killed a resident of this hotel. That means I need witnesses like you to talk with me, and no one else, unless I ask you to. So when you start giving a description of a gorgeous woman who spent the morning with GQ, you're out of line. That's not your job. Your job is to tell me everything you saw or think happened in the last 24 hours. Then, if the NYPD thinks we need help finding witnesses, we will ask for the public's help. Tonio, close to tears, shaking uncontrollably, mutters under his breath, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Dinellen gives him a little time to get his composure. Then he starts his interview looking at Tonio, eye to eye, just talking. No note-taking yet. He starts with a few ground-ball-type questions. Dinellen learns that Sal Tonio has worked as the desk manager for the Tarrant for the past 2.5 years. He works the 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift, Monday through Friday. He arrived on time today and relieved Margaret McMahon, who works the midnight shift. Dinellen is listening attentively and occasionally scribbling a note. The witness is starting to calm down and promptly answers each question. Dinellen tells him, okay, you're doing good, buddy. So just tell me about GQ. GQ already owned one of the penthouse suites at the Tarrant when I started working here. I saw him all the time, usually with lady friends. He never met a broad he didn't like. He was doing everyone, from movie stars to cleaning ladies. Anyone with a skirt. He never had any fights, arguments, or problems. They loved him. This morning, about 7, he walks past the front desk. He's a great guy, always smiling and laughing. He gives us the usual hellos and tells us he's expecting a lady friend. About 15 minutes later, a gorgeous broad walked by the front desk and says she's visiting a friend on the 38th floor. She was early 20s, with that nice Marilyn Monroe shape, a big pair, blonde, tan, a real looker. We all just figured GQ's having a matinee, like who cares? What's for lunch? GQ's getting laid. Nothing unusual. The broad leaves around 11 o'clock. An hour later, a chambermaid notices that his door was partially open, and she calls inside. When no one answered, she peeks in, and she sees him laid out on the floor. He was almost naked, just wearing a damp bathrobe, face down and dead. She screamed for help. GQ's neighbor calls the desk. I race there. I call security, and they call the cops. The broad. You ever see her before? Asked Donnellan. She looked familiar, but I can't remember if she was here or in a magazine. GQ had so many gorgeous broads. It's hard to remember. Anyone hear any unusual noises, a fight, a crash, anything? No, says Tonio. Donnellan calls his detectives back to the room, and they escort the desk manager back to his post and bring in Kenya Holmes for an interview. Donnellan is reviewing his notes as the detectives walk Miss Holmes into the room. As he stands to introduce himself, he instinctively senses that Kenya may have been an intimate acquaintance of GQ. She's a breathtaking beauty, almost 6 feet tall, with flawless light brown skin. Donnellan figures right away that she was probably an aspiring model or actress working at the Tarrant to make contacts and pay the rent. He was right. Kenya begins to sob as she sits in the chair. Donnellan offers her a box of Kleenex before starting to ask questions. Donnellan learns that Kenya Holmes, a 26-year-old model, had been working at the Tarrant for the last 3 years. She is considered a temp worker who is only available between modeling gigs. Usually her assignment is as a cocktail waitress, receptionist, or some other visible position. This morning she arrived at the Tarrant at 7:30 and reported to Carlos Diaz. Her assignment was to organize the room service breakfast orders. She was checking that the orders on the 38th floor were properly delivered when she noticed GQ's door was partially open. At this point of the interrogation, Holmes cries as she describes how she found GQ. Donnellan had already read the reports of her prior interviews. He did not want to go over each and every detail again, but there was something missing. He lets her talk until she's finished. Kenya? Donnellan asks. When you first noticed the door was open, was it wide open, or just slightly opened, or almost shut, all the way? She thinks for a few moments before she answers. I'd say it was barely open. As I walked by, I noticed that it appeared closed, but on closer look, I could see that it was not. Then what did you do? I knocked on the door lightly. There was no answer or response. I gently opened the door a little more and called in a little louder. Still, there was no response. Then I opened the door and saw GQ unconscious, lying on the floor. I screamed and cried for help. The next thing I know, there are people all over the room, and I find out that GQ is dead. Kenya continues to cry. Donnellan waits until she calms down before he resumes his line of questioning in a very consoling tone. Kenya, there is something you're not telling me. Something I need to know. Did you know GQ well? Yes. He was so nice. He gave me my first real break. He had his agent make some calls for me. That's how I got my first modeling job. He wasn't looking for anything in return. He didn't demand sex in return for his help. He didn't even hint at it. He was just a real friend. Did you have a relationship with him, Kenya? Yes. It was a beautiful relationship. But that was 6 months after he got me my first gig. Besides, we both knew that he was a ladies' man, and he wasn't looking for a long-term relationship. He was up front. No pressure. That was the beauty of his charm. No lies, no sneaking around. Just occasional sex with a great lover. That was GQ. When I went by his room and saw his door open, I thought maybe we could get together for a quickie. It wouldn't have been the first time. Danilo ends his interview and allows Kenya to compose herself before she leaves for home. She is too distraught to go back to work. Then he scribbles more notes on his pad, thinks briefly of GQ, and heads out to see if his team has developed any promising leads. Chapter 5. Police officers, detectives, employees, and the hotel's corporate security team are actively reviewing surveillance tapes at the command center. There are thousands of people caught on tape. Perhaps one of them is the murderer. But there is no conceivable or clear-cut suspect. Most of the investigators and detectives have a gut feeling that GQ was assaulted by a thief, so their attention is focused on spotting any offbeat characters that do not appear to be typical residents, guests, or visitors at the hotel. Danilo knows one thing for certain. If he acted on detectives' gut feelings, he would have dozens of perps for every homicide. His questions remain, who and why? Sure, GQ was a world-class womanizer, but he never pushed himself on anyone. He didn't have to. Detectives are determined to interview every resident, guest, and visitor at or near the hotel as a potential witness or suspect. All employees, contractors, and subcontractors are on the interview lists. No stone will be left unturned until the killer is in handcuffs. At the same time, the media frenzy is in full swing with heated competition to find former lovers of Gregory the Great. Sergeant Wagner is studying a sketch of the hotel layout with the Tarrant security director, Frankie Caraballo. Three corporate executives from the Tarrant International Home Office are also in the conference room. This disturbs Danilo. He nods to Caraballo that he wants to speak privately. They enter an empty office and close the door. Caraballo and Danilo have known each other for more than 10 years. They worked together on several cases when Frankie was a detective in the 1-6. They like and respect each other as honest, hard-working cops. When Danilo asks the security chief about the executives, he knows that this case just got more difficult. They had a first wave of the corporate damage control team from the home office, Caraballo says. Their first stop was a strategy meeting with Barry Rosen for help to reverse the plunging value of the Tarrant. 5 minutes after reporters announced that GQ was murdered in the flagship hotel of Tarrant International, the stock price dropped 10% on the big board. The money managers on Wall Street react with speed to any bad news, and they sell first, then wait. When the news was leaked that GQ was a victim of a love triangle, the stock recovered and is now up more than 2 points from this morning's open. Their goal now is product placement. They will use every media inquiry about GQ to flaunt the luxury hotel suites and the breathtaking views of the city. Danilo shakes his head as Caraballo continues. My job is to help you find the killer. I will try not to let anyone get in your way. But Danilo, let me tell you, I will handle them, not you. These attorneys and MBAs will not be intimidated, and they will stop you in your tracks if you push them too far. They were assured by Rosen that he will coordinate all media correspondence with them. Trust me, keep your cool, and we can work together. If you start screaming and cursing at them or any of the employees of the Tarrant, they will slow you down, by having an attorney at every interview. I've seen them in action. There is no mixed message. The primary goal for the damage control team is to protect their investment and minimize any downside risk. For Dinellen, the hunt for GQ's killer is more than a homicide investigation. It's a quest. The damage control team gives Caraballo and Dinellen a cautious but respectful greeting when they return. They assure the detective commander that the staff at the Tarrant will offer all possible assistance to the NYPD. Dinellen thanks them for their cooperation and starts reviewing a cross-section of surveillance tapes that are being studied by his detectives. The black and white tapes show several different views of the crowded hotel lobby. There are three major conferences at the hotel. Attendees with name cards on their lapels are visible in every corner of the lobby, along with employees, tourists, shoppers, and customers having breakfast. There are many young, attractive, and stylish women visible on each tape, but no one has been able to identify the mystery woman in any of the scenes. Dinellen was hoping to get at least a blurred image that could help detectives identify and find her, but no such luck. After several futile hours of reviewing tapes and updating the progress of potential eyewitness interviews, there is still no meaningful development. Dinellen is exasperated as he overhears the corporate executives murmuring about the rising stock value of Tarrant International. The corporate number crunches are getting under his skin. So, he decides to make a bold move and secretly visit a friend with underworld connections. The headquarters for Metropolitan Auto Parts, Wholesale Tire and Repair Incorporated, is located on First Avenue, near the entrance to the Queens Midtown Tunnel. Brady Finnegan is the boss and the owner of all 15 automotive shops throughout the city. His wholesale operation provides discount prices for taxis, buses, trucks, and cops. He also pays rent to the five families for protection. Finnegan, a childhood friend of Dinellen's father, is Dinellen's intermediary with the five crime families that control New York City. Finnegan is not your typical millionaire. Even at age 73, he still gets his hands dirty changing tires and repairing cars. When he sees Dinellen enter the shop, he can tell from the glum look on his face that this is not a social call. He cleans the grease from his hands and greets the detective. Many cliches swirl around in Brady's head, like, "You look like you lost your best friend," or, "You look like you have the weight of the world on your shoulders." Sadly, Finnegan knows that these thoughts are not platitudes today. They walk back to his office and close the door. Brady Finnegan is more like an uncle than a friend. He looks at Dinellen with trepidation, unsure of what to say. On the one hand, as he clearly sees the mental anguish consuming Dinellen, he's tempted to advise him to take some time off to grieve the loss of his best friend. But he knows Dinellen would never take that recommendation, so he simply asks if there's a reason for the visit. Dinellen asks him to reach out to the five families. Finnegan asks Dinellen to wait out in the shop while he makes a few calls. Finnegan calls his friend and contact, Joey Carullo, known as Handsome Joey, a constitutional lawyer and consigliere for the five families. Handsome Joey picks up the phone on the first ring. Finnegan gives him a polite greeting and lets the consigliere know that he needs a favor for a detective friend. Carullo asks, "Which one?" Finnegan tells him it's Dinellen. "Whoa, whoa," thinks Handsome Joey. Getting a, quote, marker from a rising star like Dinellen is better than money in the bank. The consigliere then tells Finnegan to consider the family's cooperation a done deal. Before he hangs up the phone, he asks Finnegan, "Do you remember when a cop was shot a few years ago when he was walking into a candy store in Brooklyn to buy a pack of gum?" Finnegan says, "Sure, I remember, and I contributed $2,000 for the widow's fund." "Well," says Carullo, "that was the first time I heard about Detective Dinellen. He locked up Vic the Animal Petrino before the mob got their hands on him. It turns out that the Animal was a low-level street goon trying to make a name for himself with the syndicate, but he was out of control and reckless. When the families found out he killed the cop, they put a contract out on his head as a sign of good faith. The families planned to ice Petrino for killing a cop, but Dinellen got to him first when he rolled over Petrino's cousin Tommy, who was hiding the Animal in the back of an ice cream warehouse on Staten Island. Hey, Brady, relay this message to Dinellen. Tell him that the, quote, Animal's supposed suicide by hanging at Rikers cost the families 20 large. A few minutes later, Finnegan calls Dinellen back into his office, and he assures the detective that the bosses will put the word out to New York and the National Syndicate for associates to be on the lookout for anyone with information about the murder of GQ or trying to fence GQ's engraved Rolex. Dinellen understands that the families will expect mutual consideration in the future, what they refer to as a marker. But he'll cross that bridge when he gets there. As he's leaving, Dinellen warns Finnegan to stay clear of the Irish mobster in Boston in this situation. Word is, he can't be trusted. Dinellen goes back to the hotel and checks with the detectives working at the control center. There are no breakthroughs yet, so he decides to return to Manhattan South. His attention goes back to GQ's diary. Who is the blonde with GQ? Strange. She's not entered in the diary. Was it an impromptu visit? Did GQ write his diary at night? Or was this another mystery? Dinellen is driven to Manhattan South by an old-time detective, Brendan Dugan, who is 6 months away from mandatory retirement. Dugan transferred to homicide almost 40 years ago, when it was the graveyard of the Detective Bureau. In the old days, most homicides were solved by the precinct detective squad within 48 hours, and the perpetrators were usually identified at the scene. But times changed, and murders became more difficult to solve, so police departments had to shift the most talented detectives, like Dugan, to the Homicide Bureau. As they crawl through the traffic to get downtown, the detectives exchange ideas about the case. "Hey, boss," says Dugan as he drives the squad car down 2nd Avenue. "Remember, don't make mysteries. Your friend had a role in the crib. When the party's over, the broad leaves in a hurry. Maybe she had to go back to work or home to the hubby. She may not have closed the door all the way. Some lowlife in the joint sees her leave. He listens for noise. Nothing. Maybe he slightly raps on the door. No response. He thinks nobody's home. He quietly sneaks into the room and sees the wallet and jewelry. He thinks he hit the lottery. GQ catches him by surprise when he comes out of the bathroom. The perp bangs him on the head with a hammer or pipe and then takes the wallet and anything else he can grab in a hurry. And he slips out of the hotel like nothing happened." For Dugan, life is simple. A victim is robbed and assaulted in a hotel. First step, rule out robbery as the primary motive. Next step, check out the possibility of some mysterious love affair. Dinellen has known for a long time. GQ was not a simple man. This is not a simple case. Simple case.
Coming soon is the third episode of Damage Control in season 1 of Manhattan South.